We are all here with you today as readers and book lovers. You're okay? Yeah? Great. Oh, excellent. Book lovers, book creators, and book publishers here at this fabulous festival that celebrates books and reading in Massachusetts. So what you're getting today from our panel is a sort of peek behind the curtain or a look under the hood of one particular Massachusetts publishing company. We are all from Candlewick Press. So Candlewick is located in Somerville, but we're actually part of a larger international independent children's publishing company. We have offices in London and we have offices in Australia as well. And with me today, we're going to do more in-depth introductions later, but I'll just quickly introduce you to our panel. So we have three of our amazing creators with us. We have Matt Tavares, who is an author-illustrator. We have Mira Bartok, also an author-illustrator. And then we have Aqua Holmes, who currently is an illustrator, but we think someday is going to be an author as well. And then at the end is my colleague and good friend, Chris Paul. And we are just so delighted to be here today to talk to you about what we do. So my name is Karen Lotz, and I am the publisher of Candlewick, and then I also get to run the global group of companies, which the larger group is called Walker Books. So we're all part of that. And I've been at Candlewick for 18 years, and that I started back in the days when we were originally just a book distributor, really, of English books, becoming a publisher in our own right. So we are celebrating our 25th anniversary this year, which is very exciting. And now we publish about 350 books a year. And they're books for everybody from babies all the way up through new readers, middle grade readers, teenage readers, all the way into what we sometimes call new adult readers, and sometimes even for grown-ups. But we really have a focus on children's publishing. And, you know, we have a lot of fun, and we really love what we do, but we're also quite serious about it, and we have a great sense of purpose in it. And one thing I'm afraid we're not is terribly modest, because our slogan is, if you're looking for the best, look for the bear. So we also brought our bear today. This is Big Bear. And he's actually decked out in his 10th anniversary duds, but he really wanted to come along to help us celebrate being 25. And I think we have a slide, actually, of our employees. We have 112 employees coming. Ooh, there we are. So that's us. So that's the company. That's everybody out in Somerville. And we have a couple of imprints as well, but we're sort of unique in the publishing world because we are independent. We're one of the few independents left, which really just means we stand alone. So we're not part of a larger publishing group like a Random House or a HarperCollins. And that means that we're responsible for doing what we need to do to pay the bills and make everything work, but also it gives us a lot of creative freedom. And we consider that really a gift, because we can be led by our hearts and our minds and trying to make the best books that we can make, which is where all of my colleagues here on the stage come in. So, you know, some of our goals are to publish books that will really make a difference in the lives of children, really make a difference in the life of the mind, and that also reflect a spectrum of cultures and backgrounds that make up our country and bring in a little bit of that international vision from around the world as well. So we try to keep our eyes on what's going on in the world of children's literature from around the world. So if we get all that right, then we hope we're going to make books that last. And today we're going to be highlighting three of our brand new books that are just coming out this fall that we hope will join those classics that will last and go on forever. And I hope you will agree by the end of the session that we're going to meet that goal with these three fabulous new books from these creators. And I'll just mention that actually at the end of our session downstairs, there will be a book signing, so you can have your book signed by the three authors and illustrators, and that's located on the bottom floor just across from the sanctuary. So, at Candlewick, we really, really care about the book as a physical object, because we hope especially because it's a children's book. It's going to come home with you and be in your house and something that you come to love and spend a lot of time with. So we put a lot of effort into the design and the production of our books, and we actually would love to think that if someone is holding a Candlewick book in their hands, they'll be able to identify and say, oh yeah, that feels like a Candlewick book. And Chris Paul, who I mentioned earlier, and her team are really at the core and the heart of that, of what we do. So Chris is in our art department and our design department, and she leads a fabulous team, and she is absolutely part of what Candlewick is and has come to mean. Now, she and her designers touch every book that we do, whether it's a fully illustrated book or a fiction book that just has a jacket. And today we're probably going to tell you a little bit about some of the process of that bookmaking as we go on. Before Chris came to Candlewick, she's also been at Candlewick for 18 years, and she worked at a couple of other publishing companies, and she probably won't mention this to you, but she's also a painter herself. So she is an exceptionally talented woman, and she has guided us in our sort of look and feel from the very beginning. And so I'm going to turn it over to Chris now, and she's going to tell you a little bit about the process of making a children's book from the art point of view at Candlewick.
Thank you. So the subject here is the magic of children's bookmaking. I hesitate to say it takes a lot to make the magic. It's a long process and a lot of focused work from a team. It's really a collaborative art form, which makes it very exciting to work on. And the collaboration is between the author and the editor, the illustrator, and the art director. Every step along the way, that team is involved in the creation of the books. And we're very proud to be known in the industry for the quality of our books. And I think we will say part of that is probably due to the team approach to bookmaking. You know, each book is unique. My job is never dull. The book has its own voice, its message, its audience. And we do, as Karen said, pay a lot of attention to every detail along the way in producing the books. The editors and the art directors as part of this team are really more like a film director. We're behind the scenes, we are hiring the cast, we're helping to shape the book and then get it into the marketplace. Candlewick is a creatively led company, and by that I mean the main responsibility and focus is to the talent, to our authors and our illustrators. Without them, we wouldn't have much. It's the greatest pleasure of my job to work with all this talent. Three who sit alongside me right here. And I'd like to introduce them in a little more biographic way, I guess, which I will read. We have Aqua Holmes, who is a celebrated fine artist and educator whose wonderful collages explore themes of family, relationships, hope, and faith. Her very first children's book with Candlewick was Voice of Freedom, Fannie Lou Hamer by Carol Boston Weatherford. It was a Caldecott Honor Book and also a Robert Siebert Honor Book, and she won the John Steptoe New Talent Illustrator Award. The jacket dons a lot of medals. That's a nice challenge to have to put a medal on a book. Equa's current published work is Out of Wonder, Poems Celebrating Poets by Kwame Alexander, which is a New York Times bestseller. She's currently working on another picture book called The Stuff of Stars by Marion Dane Bauer, which is due out in fall of 2018. And then we have our baseball-loving Matt Tavares, a longtime collaborator with Candlewick Press. I think I worked on your very first book when I started at Candlewick Press. He has written and illustrated many titles, the earliest being Oliver's Game, Zachary's Ball, Mudball, and several others with a baseball hero focus, picture book biographies with the titles Henry Aaron's Dream, There Goes Ted Williams, Becoming Babe Ruth, and Growing Up Pedro. Also, Crossing Niagara and Lighter Than Air. And to add to that, he illustrated a beautiful edition of the Twas the Night Before Christmas in black and white art, exquisite, and also worked with the poem Over the River and Through the Woods. Working with other authors as well, Matt illustrated Lady Liberty by Doreen Rappaport, The Gingerbread Pirates by Kristen Gladstrup, and Jubilee by Alicia Potter. His latest authored and illustrated picture book is Red and Lulu, which combines the cheer of Christmas, the magic of New York City, and the real meaning of the holiday season. And then Mira Bartok, a relatively recent and welcome addition to the Candlewick family. He's a writer and artist whose New York Times bestselling memoir, The Memory Palace, won the National Book Critics Circle Award for autobiography. The Wonderling is her first middle grade fantasy and is now being adapted for a feature film, which is very exciting. And a follow-up book is being planned for 2019. So it's a pleasure to have you all here.
So we thought we would talk a little bit about how we decide to publish a book. So in addition to being our creative director, Chris Paul is our associate publisher. So, and we have various editorial directors, editors, designers, lots of people involved in making decisions about books. But one of the things that we do that is actually a little bit different is that we tend to make our decisions about books based on what we think the value of the book will be. So typically that's going to start with a manuscript that comes in. And I know a lot of people, when they're beginning to think about writing, they sort of have the idea, oh, if I'm going to do a children's book, do I need to do the pictures as well? But actually that is our job. Sometimes you have an author illustrator, as we do here on the stage, which is a very exciting opportunity because you're going to work with that person in two different modalities. But most of the time, the book starts with a text. So when a text comes in to an editor, she or he will read the book and make a determination about it. And usually at Candlewick, we then share it in a small group. And what's really important with the younger texts is that the book is read aloud, because ultimately it is going to be read aloud to somebody. And so we start by reading the book to each other. And then once we have decided that we're going forward with the text, we always share it with the art department. Because another aspect of it is that if the book is going to be illustrated, it needs to be illustratable. And sometimes a text may take care of the pictures all by itself and not really need artwork with it, in which case it may not be a picture book. We believe that the best kinds of picture books are where the text and the artwork both bring an equal amount to the realization of that book. And one of the most exciting parts of our job as editors is actually that moment when we turn it over to the art department and they start thinking about how the book is going to be illustrated and thinking about the right artists who are going to be the perfect match for that text, to bring that text visually to life. And of the three panelists that we have here today, each of you came into illustration at a different point in your careers, which is really a very interesting thing. So, Aqua, you came to illustration after doing artwork your whole life, but not necessarily as an illustrator, right? What was that like?
Well, it was sort of an old dream that I had back in the day when I was in college. I thought, oh, I'm going to be a children's book illustrator, because as a child, that was really my introduction to artwork. Going to the library, reading picture books, I saw my first watercolors there, my first oil paintings, my first pencil sketches, and so I kind of considered that that was my doorway. But when I got to college, I took a couple of classes in illustration. I was like, nah, this is too hard. Too much drawing, you know, and I just let it go. But I do believe that sometimes your dream pursues you instead of you pursuing the dream. So when someone from Candlewick contacted me about the possibility of illustrating a children's book, it wasn't sort of like a wild idea. It was like a buried idea, but it was there. And I wasn't sure if anything would come out of it, but then she called me back and told me about this Fannie Lou Hamer manuscript. And then I knew it was right for me because it was about Fannie Lou Hamer. So the transition has been challenging at times, learning to work within a page size and not sort of do whatever I want to do, to think about continuity from the first illustration to the last. So I'm really like learning on the job here. And it's been great working with the family at Candlewick because you guys had so much confidence in me from the very beginning. And I sort of used that to get through that first book that, well, they think I can do it, so let me just keep going, keep going, keep going. So it's been great.
And Matt, you came to us, I believe, pretty much right at the beginning of your career, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. I made a book as my senior thesis in college. I was going to Bates College up in Maine. And I think it was a case where not knowing anything about the children's book business was probably a good thing, and not knowing how hard it was to write a picture book. I mostly wanted to be an illustrator at the time. I was an art major. There weren't any illustration-specific courses. And at first I was going to try to find a story, some public domain story or some fairy tale or something to illustrate, and I was having a hard time finding anything, so I decided to write my own story, and I spent my whole school year working on this book and then set out to try to get it published. And actually, I was looking through my old journals recently, and it was I hit the 20th anniversary of when I first called Candlewick Press. It was May of 1997, my senior year, and they told me they only accept submissions through agents. They didn't accept unsolicited manuscripts. So, but I had been to the bookstore, and I kept finding Candlewick books, and I just was blown away by them. So then I had this stretch of time where everything was falling into place in this way that I felt like I was going to get hit by a bus or something. Like everything was going too well. Like I met an agent just through kind of this lucky, weird coincidence, friend of a friend of a friend, and she actually liked my book. She started shopping it around. She sent it to Candlewick. I remember getting the email from her saying that something might be happening with Candlewick. And I went in and had a meeting at Candlewick with Liz Bicknell, the editorial director. And even going into that meeting, I was like, all right, don't get your hopes up. Like, they might just want to, like, point out things that they like and don't like about it. But they actually wanted to publish my book. But they saw it as a rough draft, and they wanted me to do the whole thing over again, which at the time, I had never really gone through this process. So I figured, yeah, we'll change a few pictures, but I wrote the whole story over. My editor helped me. You were talking about learning on the job. Like I had never thought about how a picture book works, how some of the story is told with words, some is told with pictures. We found ways to get rid of a bunch of words, put more of that information in the pictures. I did the whole book over again. I worked with Chris as the art director. I think it was maybe your first book at Candlewick.
It was.
Because you weren't a full-time employee there yet. You were, like, freelance. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, so it was all very surreal and amazing for me. I mean, I was at these meetings. I was 22 years old, and I felt like I should be an intern just listening to these people that knew what they were doing, but they're actually listening to my ideas, and I was supposed to be the author who, you know, I would just try to pretend I had a clue what I was doing. But I feel so lucky that I stumbled into all that stuff when I did.
Thanks. And Mira, I was very lucky enough to be the person who actually got to edit Mira's book. And I have to say, I will never, ever forget the first time I read the first pages of your book. So I know where I was. What was it like for you in that submission process? Because you had published before, but not necessarily in this genre for this audience.
Well, you guys were my dream publisher. And everyone kept saying, well, you know, they're not going to have as much money as HarperCollins, Random House,
sadly.
Blah, blah, blah. And I was like, will I get enough to survive? I don't know. I mean, they just didn't want to get my hopes up. So the submission process happened very fast and very, very, it was very surreal because, I mean, of course, some people rejected it, but then there were four or five big contenders, and I submitted just a quarter of the book, in the beginning I just had very little expectations. I really wasn't sure that was the right thing to do, but my agent really thought it was, But, you know, it just in terms of submitting a children's book, I had worked on an adult book for a year before for my other publisher, and I just wasn't into it. And my agent said, just go ahead. You really need to do what you want to do. And so I'm so happy I did. And then it was just a crazy thing because we got a movie deal right before the book auction. And then, anyway, I got to go with you guys.
We are the lucky ones, yeah. in that. And just to, you knew you were going to illustrate the book from the beginning,
yes.
though, right? That was part of what your hope was, because it's a very long novel, but you wanted to do the artwork as well, which is very exciting.
I just thought it would have some spot illustrations. I mean, and maybe, actually, it looks, except for the cover, which looks so far beyond what I ever imagined. I love your covers, but like, look at that. I mean, it's just, I can't believe it. So, I wanted to do some spot art illustrations and a handful of illustrations, but the way Chris, the team, and, you know, everybody design, you know, how you design, it looks exactly how I imagined it to look, how I dreamed it would look, except that it looks even better. And so, I learned since then that not that many middle grade authors illustrate their own books. I didn't know that.
That's pretty rare. Yeah,
is it?
Definitely. Okay. And so you guys came in knowing that you had the words and the pictures together, but Aqua obviously, in your case, with Out of Wonder, the words were coming to you. Chris, how do you do that? How do you and your team come up with the right artist to do a book?
Well, it's a process, and it's a very interesting process. As Karen explained, once an editor has interest in a text, it's shared with me and some others in the art department. We read it and carefully, and then we send it out to more people in the art department and for everyone to think about ideas of how to bring the book alive. We then have what's called an illustrator search meeting where everybody gathers. Nobody's talked ahead of time. This is to come with your ideas and brainstorm. Obviously, the editor and the editorial team is there, and we read the manuscript carefully. We'll talk through its challenges, what the illustrator needs to bring to the text, and all the digital portfolios of the people that are mentioned there are put up on the screen, and it's a lot of ideas. It's a blitz of ideas going out there. It's a lot of fun. Ultimately, about three names usually rise to the surface. Sometimes it's just one that said, oh, this is perfect, but usually we try to have three ideas because it is then shared with the author. We will not publish a book that an author doesn't feel the illustration is right for her manuscript. And then once the author has agreed with us, our choices, and I'll just say we make an effort, certainly look at the talent we've been working with, but we're also looking at new talent, whether it's already published talent or just out of school talent. We want to keep all those juices flowing. So once we have an illustrator, obviously he or she has sent the manuscript. They want to do the book. And I will say illustrators have to carefully choose what books to illustrate. And we go to contract and set a schedule. And eventually the bookmaking begins. And it's a... it's quite a long, intense process, really. There's several rounds of sketch stages, very, very important part of making any kind of book, but specifically a picture book where the page turn really counts. And as Karen had mentioned, the balance of the art with the illustration, so the art enhances the text, doesn't duplicate it, but enhances it and helps tell the story. So the bookmaking is several rounds of sketch staging, rounds of proofreading, and to the creation of the final art. We do make some little turning dummies, which I brought a tiny one here. It's just a mini version of a sketch dummy, if anybody wants to take a look at it. This is Red and Lulu. I don't know how many dummies were made for Red and Lulu, but probably a few. Let's see, and then, you know, the art director, designer, really, all the fine-tuning of the font choices, the end papers, the stock is going to be printed on, and then, of course, the all-important jacket design. So some of this, the really vital component of developing and crafting a book, you know, happens as a team, but at the sketch stage. Aqua, can you talk to us a little bit about how you approached I choked you up, huh? The Voice of Freedom was actually a biography written in verse, and Out of Wonder is poetry. How did you approach that?
Voice of Freedom was my first book. Mm-hmm. So I think initially there was probably a lot of carryover from what I do in my studio when I'm creating a piece for myself. And there were certain pages, certain poems in the book that just jumped out at me, and images immediately came to mind. And so that's how I started. And I think our first meeting with some of those early illustrations, they just seemed like they were flowing out of me. But then came the real work, which were the poems that didn't necessarily make images jump to mind. And I had never really had to work in that way, where I was working from a work of art, which was mm-hmm. a poem, and mm-hmm. having to interpret it myself. Mm-hmm. So the real work was figuring out how to complement the verse. And as I say, this was my first time, so it was challenging. But I feel like I have the right support. With Out of Wonder, it was very different from the biography, because in the biography, I'm talking about one person from page 1 to page 32, and that person is a child, and then they're a teenager, and then they're an adult, and then they're an elder. In Out of Wonder, every page was its own story. And so in a way, it was a nice shift to be able to do that and to embrace all of these different poets and find out or try to complement their particularities, like an E.E. Cummings who works with punctuation and lowercase letters. You know, how can I reflect something about the personality of this poet? Also poets who are, you know, were writing in the 1800s versus poets who are writing in 2015. So it was a great challenge on every page. I also wanted the book to look like it was done by one illustrator without making each illustration look the same, if that makes any sense. Mm-hmm. So they were both really excellent challenges, and I feel like Out of Wonder gave me a little breathing space from the biography space. And so now I'm working on a biography as well, and so I'm back into that sort of deep research and historical, wanting the dresses on the women to look like the dresses that women wore during those times. This was a little bit lighter and more fun.
Here's some examples of some sketches from and how the book is put together. In a mm-hmm. case of poetry, we would typeset the poem so that Aqua knew what space it would take up on the page. But from there, it's really moved around a lot. But this is the finished piece from that. This beautiful work. And this became this.
There are some sketches that literally look like just doodles on a napkin. And but you know what you mean, right? You get back to your studio, and you know what that means.
And this became that.
That's the magic part. Mm-hmm.
That's it. There you got it. Right, yes. That's right. So we're going to talk to Matt about you've done many bios and some fiction. where you're the author and the illustrator. How do you choose your subjects? And how much does the visual pull of a person's story interest you?
For the biographies, I often remember something Doreen Rappaport told me. The first nonfiction book I did was Lady Liberty, which was written by Doreen Rappaport, and I was the illustrator. And I remember her talking about how, and she's done a lot of nonfiction, a lot of biographies, and she said there has to be a reason to make the book, which I always think about. Just, you know, she did a book called Martin's Big Words, which is about Martin Luther King Jr., and she said how, at first, she thought, like, who? There are so many books about him already. So she didn't know if it seemed, if the world needed another book. But she came up with this different story to tell that she felt hadn't been told before. So I try to look at it that way. Like, when I was reading a Babe Ruth biography, I was reading it just trying to think, is there something in here that hasn't been told before? And I found this story about his childhood that I felt was different than anything I had seen. And like with Hank Aaron, you know, everyone knows Hank Aaron as baseball's all-time home run king. But when I read his autobiography, I was just struck by how fascinating his story was, you know, just what he went through to become a baseball player. And I thought that was something that would really connect with kids. So that's kind of how I choose. You know, sometimes I'll read a biography about someone thinking, I'd really like to do a book about this person, but I just don't find anything that I feel like hasn't been done before. And the visual part of it, I probably should think more about that heading into it. I know some books, like I did Crossing Niagara, about the first person to try to walk across Niagara Falls on a tightrope. And that was definitely purely visual. Like, I had seen a picture just in the newspaper of Nick Walenda, who did that a few years ago. And just the image of a person on a rope above Niagara Falls, I thought was just so striking. And I thought that would be such a, just a cool, just the visuals of a picture book would fit that story so perfectly.
Great.
And how did you come to Red and Lulu?
Red and Lulu was kind of a long and winding road. It was, originally I wrote a nonfiction manuscript about the Rockefeller Center Christmas tree. I don't know how much you guys even know this part of the process, but that was the idea came to, it was 2011 when I first had the idea. So I submitted a nonfiction manuscript to Candlewick. And this is where I feel like a good editor and a good art director, they are like visionaries, where they can look at a manuscript and see something that I never saw. And there's always these times where at first I feel like, what are they talking about? Like, that doesn't make any sense. They don't get what I'm trying to do. But then, like, when I think about it, it's like, ah, oh, that's such a good idea. So basically they told me they wanted me to add some characters to it, which at first I tried adding human characters. I ended up adding a pair of cardinals who live in the tree and telling this whole process from their point of view. So it turned into a whole different thing where it wasn't nonfiction anymore. It wasn't, the tree's a part of the story, but it's more just about these birds. And even from there, like the dummy that Chris has there, that's what you call a sort of an early version of, I'm not saying a mean thing to Chris, they call it a dummy. But that version has about 1,000 words. When I submitted that to Candlewick, my editor and art director came back to me with this idea. They thought this could be a wordless book. So they wanted me to get rid of all the words. So I spent a few months turning it into a wordless book, which I felt like when I would print up little dummies like that and share it with friends, and there was some disconnect. Where with that version, people seemed really emotionally connected to the story. With the wordless version, they spent so much time trying to figure out what was happening. So then we kind of combined them, and the final book has about 450 words. So we kind of added words back where we needed words, which is a pretty cool way to do to try to build a book, because you know, some pages we found were actually stronger without the words, because the picture told everything that you needed to tell. But yeah, that's where that story came from. Long answer.
Should we share some of the sketches from Red and Lulu and how it developed? Trust, this is the 400 word.
Yeah, this is pretty much the final version. Yeah. And it might be interesting to hear. I do all my sketches on the computer. That way, I can I can place the text where I want it, and I can move things around. I have just a Wacom tablet. Yeah, I draw on the tablet, it shows up on the screen. My final art, I still do the old-fashioned way with watercolor, paper, pencil. but the early stuff I do on the computer.
Oh. Interesting.
This is showing the different seasons.
Yeah.
I used to do my sketches just pencil on paper, which is a fine way to do it, but I just like this way. I can press save for one idea, and I can move things around. Like say the bird in the sketch, if I want it to be bigger or smaller, the bird's on a separate layer, so I can move the bird around. I can make it bigger. I can make it smaller. So it just kind of makes that process a little more organic.
It's a wordless spread.
Yep. And a lot of my sketching process, I really still use a lot of the stuff I learned in those first couple books that I did when Chris was my art director for my first two books. I had never had to do sketches before. Like, yes. I was coming right from college where I would have art projects, so I wasn't even sure what to hand in. And I remember these meetings. I don't know if you remember, but I would show you sketches for Twas the Night Before Christmas.
That's right.
And I remember one where she said, okay, the reindeer kind of look like cows. And I would say, like,
oh my God.
I just... You know, I'll find, you know, a reindeer model or something. And same thing, like Santa Claus, you thought his arms were too long. And I hadn't had for most of my illustrations, I have people pose and I have, you know, reference photos. So then I kind of learned I had to really figure this stuff out for the sketch. And
I still do it
that way. Oh, I remember you asked me how I transfer my sketch to my final art. Do I use a light box?
Yeah.
And I was like, I'd never thought about that. Like, I would just start completely over for the final art. So, like, I went out after the meeting and bought a light box, which I still use.
Yeah. I'm at their stage now.
Yeah.
Terrific. Okay. So, Mira.
Yes, Chris.
Talk a little bit about the challenges of working on a book that is a much longer text. And what was the best part? And what was the worst part?
The best part of the... Oh, gosh. The best part... Well, I have to say one of my favorite parts of working on something really long or short, I think, is just that the part where I do a million different things to gather ideas. So I'm either going through a museum, making sketches, and because I'm very, you know, I started out as a visual artist, so I'm so image-driven. And so, and I worked in museums, so I'm always obsessed with looking at objects and imagining and settings. And imagining these things in rooms, and then they spark other ideas. So it's that part, the research part. Also, looking at books and images, and so the research part I love. And as far as in terms of the writing process, I think it was my best part was actually realizing that I could really make these characters three-dimensional, and I felt so at a certain point entrenched in this world that I just totally enjoyed just going forth and writing these, like, just writing aloud, you know, speaking aloud, doing the dialogue, acting things out like animators do. I know that. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say the worst part, but the hardest part was exactly what you're talking about when you turn in sketches. And I guess I knew that was part of being an illustrator, but I thought, oh, I'll totally bypass that. I'll just come up with some things and you guys will like them. That was really hard. That was really hard because I've never worked that way in my life. So it was a complete different way of working, you know, to in my art and the little illustration I had done before, which was so minimal, I just sat down and did the thing. And I had nobody approved it, nobody checked it over, nobody made decisions. It was just all me. And also the other thing was to have a to have, I mean, it's such an obvious thing to have a character where you, the character should look consistent through the book. Didn't even cross my mind because I never imagined it. I guess I wasn't thinking, I was originally thinking that I would do more decorative things, maybe like a decorative panel and maybe a little spot. I never really envisioned it to have my main character or another character in several different illustrations. And which, I mean, obviously, that's distracting a little bit. It, you know, that worked so well, and it was so important in the book. So at a certain point, I just kind of, I think I remember asking you guys, can you guys just come up with some ideas for where, what I should do and where? Because I just had no confidence in the whole process. That was really hard. But it, as time went on, what?
The confidence came back, though.
When it was clear that this book was so much longer than we thought it would be, and there wasn't really room for really large, you know, full page, double page spreads, except for a couple. You know, Chris said, just do these spot illustrations, and she told me what to do, and I was on it, and I got them done, and I sent them to her, that was the other thing, sending, does this look okay? Sending, like, I didn't even know you were supposed to do that. I was completely clueless. So it got easier at the end, much easier.
And it started with Arthur, right? Is my mic on? You can hear me? Good. Okay. Arthur is the little fox-like creature that you see there on the cover, and he is the most heart-melting hero, truly. And it was interesting because I briefly mentioned before about when I first received part of the manuscript, actually because of where I was trying to read the text on my cell phone because Mira did have an agent, and as sometimes happens, an agent will send the book out, as she described, to several publishers at once, and there's a deadline, and you have to get back to the agent by the deadline and say, yes, I'm interested, and you know, I would like to make the following offer. But it just so happened that her agent sent this book out when I was over in England, and I happened to be on the coast in Cornwall with my family. And I was actually, it was a very, very rainy day, and I had very spotty cell phone service. It was not like in the commercials. I could not still hear. And I was getting this text that was coming in and out. And Jen Gates is Mira's agent, and she's one of my favorite agents. I know she has impeccable taste, and she was saying, we've been trying to reach you because I think you would really, really like this book. And so I started trying to read Mira's book from my cell phone, and I was actually sitting in front of Tintagel Castle, which is this ruin on the coast of Cornwall that's rumored to be the seat of where Arthur's...
was born.
You know, where he was born. Yeah. And it was this foggy, misty day, and I started her text. And it was talking about the story of this little unlikely hero who was very, very timid, very, very shy, but had to do something brave for a friend. And that friend gave him the name of Arthur. And it was just so magical that I was reading this there. But there was the little picture that I think Chris may have a slide of that just came with the text. So that was, you know, at that point, that was really all we saw of Arthur, and that Mira was going to be the illustrator. And then, of course, it became a novel, so it was a really interesting process because so many moments in the text could have been illustrated. It was really a question of having to say, you know, oh, no, we're going to have to give up on that one. And so is there anything in the book that you really wished you could have illustrated that you didn't illustrate, or alternatively, is there something you illustrated you never had imagined in your mind while you were working on it?
I have to really think about that, but there are two things come to mind. There's an illustration when there's a point where there's a creature called the Norak, who's a three-headed kind of frog like human thing who at first looks like a lumpy old man, but then you realize there are different little heads popping up and saying things, and he ferries Arthur across in a clandestine manner, ferries him across the river at night. And I really liked the illustration, except I didn't quite like Arthur. I would wish that I had made that a little better and that had gotten in, because, or maybe done it in a way that you could actually see the character better, the creature better. There are a couple creatures in there that you know, I'd like to see, but we might see them in book two.
Yeah, maybe they'll come back in book two. Yeah.
And I'm not happy at all with my one character, Wire, and I just didn't have, you know, that's the other thing, is like, when people have, my deadline was a little crazy, and a lot of that was based on the fact of this movie deal, so I could have gotten more time, but it just, you know, so I kind of worked at this crazy pace, and had I had more time, I would have definitely spent more time, you know, developing certain characters visually, and really, so, hopefully that process will be a little easier for book two.
I'd like to just say that this initial Arthur never changed. You didn't have to sketch Arthur. He was done.
Arthur and Trinket I've always felt solid about. Yeah.
And here's wonderful Arthur on the title page of the book. And another one of their very early wonderful sketches. That was colorized slightly and in the book. And just to say that you did most of the art in full color. And then we went through a long process of deciding whether we were going to print it in full color or not. We ultimately decided to use two color. So all of the art was made into duotones, printing in a black and a terracotta Pantone color. And ultimately, we think it just captured the atmosphere of the book better.
I always actually, in my mind, thought it would probably look best in sepia tone. And
So, and the fact that there isn't more art in the book is because the text is so long. I mean, when you do a book like this, you have to lay the book out. You have to see where the gaps are, where maybe you can accommodate a spot here and there, but you know, books are 16-page signatures. You have to keep it within a certain amount of pages. So
it was supposed to be a 200-page tryout novel to see if I could write a novel. Yeah. I guess it didn't work out that because I had a whole other project that was supposed to, I was just, this was my tryout book. I wasn't even going to do anything with it. So. Well,
at 464 pages.
Yeah.
Yes, 464 pages later.
Yeah.
So we keep talking about the magic, but as Chris said right at the beginning, obviously there's an enormous amount of hard work that goes into making the books and the beautiful images that you see inside. But pretty much the very last part of the process, in most cases, is actually the jacket. Which is, of course, the place where the book is going to intersect with the rest of the world, right? Whether you see it online or you hopefully see it in a physical bookshop, that jacket is how you're going to meet that book. So there's a lot of pressure on it to do a lot of work on behalf of the story inside and everything that's come before.
It is really the poster for the book. And during the book's process, when we have the artist into doing final art, that's when we start the jacket process, and we'll ask the illustrator if they have any ideas, and we'll have our own thoughts about it. It's going back and forth and getting some more sketches, and we have some slides of some of the early thoughts on Red and Lulu as to where, what to do with that jacket. And maybe Matt, you can talk a little bit about the ideas here. Obviously, we would want Red and Lulu in there, but that was...
This was my idea for the cover underneath the jacket.
Oh, okay.
My first idea, I pretty adamantly didn't want to show the Rockefeller Center Christmas tree on the cover of the book, because I felt like that gives away something late in the story. So we had some back and forth about that, but for this idea, I think the next slide you probably show what I... So my idea was that would be the art on the jacket, with the title up top and my name down the bottom. Mm-hmm. And then So if you take the jacket off, underneath you would see the same tree as the Rockefeller Center Christmas tree, just the sort of close-up of it. So we had, yeah, this process was pretty, sometimes there's this linear process from sketch to sketch where they ask me to add something and we go back and forth. This, I kind of went through a bunch of different ideas that didn't really make any sense. But yeah, here I have sort of this aerial, this one actually led to the final design, which was, we decided to zoom it in. And after, I think I did like 6 or 7 different sketches. God. And then at the covers meeting, they came up with the idea of using the background from an interior illustration, which is what this is, and then add the birds. So I painted probably 5 versions each of Red and Lulu, and then my art director digitally added them in. Like this here is a mock-up where you can see there's kind of a white line around the birds, and we kind of played around with different spots the birds could go, and ended up... With that as the cover.
It's so beautiful.
Thank you.
The cover. Are those not great?
And I did come around to the idea of the tree being on the cover. Like, and I think a lot of the idea was I was convinced that spoilers don't really mean the same thing in a picture book as they do like for a movie or even a novel, where a picture book, if all goes right, a kid's going to read it a bunch of times. And... Okay. The spoiler only affects that first 5-minute read, you know, and really, even though you know what's going to happen, you should want to kind of make it happen again and again. So in the end, I think I'm happy we put the tree on the cover.
It says Christmas.
Yeah, it kind of makes sense.
It does indeed.
All important.
Everyone's getting that for Christmas for me.
So coming back to the words for a minute, Mir, you mentioned that when you write out loud sometimes. And I saw your hands start moving, and I got the sense there was a very dramatic component to that. And in The Wonderling, there's actually a lot of music. Music or the absence of music is a very big part of the book. And, of course, you yourself are a musician, as I know. How did you hear what was going on in The Wonderling? Were the songs actually... Did they have melodies and as you were writing?
Well, I hear a soundtrack through just about everything that I write. Sometimes it's someone else's music. And there are actually 2 things I listen to a lot to sort of inspire me. One is a sort of a rousing Scottish tune by the group Silly Wizard, who is... half of those guys are dead now, but, you know, it's an old group. And then the other is a kind of steampunkish French band. But for some of the... I wrote lyrics to about maybe 5 songs that don't appear. Two appear. One appears in there as character Quintus sings, and then there are the lyrics to this great epic... epic song poem that the mice, that is famous among mice, the once in future mouse king. but then there are like a couple other little songs. There's one of the Wonderling song that he remembers from childhood. I have a melody for that I've messed around on the piano. So yes, there is a melody for that. The others are just lyrics. And then there's a song that I wrote for Trinket, and it's when Arthur is longing for his friend Trinket. And I guess it's not a romance, and it's not a bromance, and because they're groundlings, I guess it's a gromance song. They're called groundlings because they're part human, part animal. So, but I am not going to sing it for you. Because I would be too embarrassed.
Do you think they'll use them in the film? I imagine they will, right?
I imagine that they will get someone really famous to write the music. It's possible that they use some of the lyrics. Actually, my contract, because it's a movie contract, and they're covering a lot of bases, and because there's, you know, part of it is to for a potential Broadway musical if the movie does well. They were very adamant in the contract that I'm allowed to record and write music based on the book, but I'm not allowed to use lyrics inside my own book. Mm. That's where we had to draw the line. So because they're all, you know, Quintus has a song that's the total, all the lyrics are there, and they really like it, and so I can totally see them doing something with it.
Right. And Aqua, music for you. I mean, that we haven't spoken much about the cover for Out of Wonder, but this also, in-house, when we saw this is just an amazing cover, and I feel like the best books just, they awaken all your senses. It's not just about hearing it, you know, from the words. It's also, I hear music when
it's
I see
so
that
jazzy.
Cover. Did you listen to music when you were... when you were working on the book, did
sometimes
you have
I
music
do, sometimes
mind?
I don't. But I love silence when I'm working as well.
Interesting.
But what was interesting about the cover on Out of Wonder is each page was a poem, and I couldn't see doing a cover that wasn't attached to a poem. So the art director and I, Amy Berkowitz, talked about what could we do from inside the book? What would be an appropriate use of an illustration that we already had? And she actually put that together from the illustration that went with the Rumi poem and a piece of the illustration that came from the Gwendolyn Brooks poem. And I thought she did a brilliant job. She created the text by hand, the Out of Wonder text by hand, and she patched that together in a way that looks like its own illustration, but it really represents, I think, the joy of discovering these poems that we want people of all ages to experience when they open this book. And also just the possibility that we all hold music inside of ourselves and that life is like a song. I think somebody wrote a song that said life is like a song, but I think it has that joyousness. I think she did a really great job.
I think we're probably almost out of time. Does anyone have any questions that they would like to ask the panel? Yes?
Could you talk a little bit more about working with agents, what that process is like, and any observations?
So the question was, could they talk a little bit more about working with agents and what that process is like?
Well, I have an agent, and early on, I did not, but I realized that I wanted to focus my attention on what I was good at, and reading contracts and sort of understanding all of the particular aspects about publishing, I didn't know, and so I needed a partner in that. So for me, it was the right choice, and what I found since then is that my agent helps me to talk through things, think through things, helps me make choices about what manuscripts I should be selecting and why. And it's not a thing where he is telling me what to do. It's sort of like we talk through it together and then the answers sort of come up. Sometimes you run into problems that need to be addressed, and it's nice to have someone else who can maybe make that phone call or investigate something so that I can focus on cutting up those little pieces of paper and making pictures out of them. So for me, I know not every illustrator has an agent, but for me, I need that partnership because so much of an illustrator's work is done in isolation, and you need to have a team. And so the agent is a very important part of the team from my perspective.
That's great.
I hope that was
helpful.
You
have another question?
What did
So the question is that there is, she saw a lot of energy in the unfinished sketches, and she wonders if there's ever ambivalence about when you go to the final art and there's that early energy and you lose
it. Yes. Yes, too. Because, well, I mean, I could say this is the first time I've ever done that, gone to from sketch to the art. So I hope that in time I can create that energy in the final art better, because I just do something and that's that, and that's my creative process. So I think some people are just I don't know, and people have different techniques, so I'm really curious to learn how to create, how to maintain that energy that you're talking about, you know. I don't know if that's hard for you.
That's a challenge in making a book, I think, just because you're not just like inspired one day and splatter paint on a canvas, and you know, it's this long process. It takes me a year to make a book sometimes, and some days there's other stuff going on, and you know, your mind is elsewhere, you have a cold or whatever, and you try to get that same energy into every picture. So I feel like I've kind of worked it into my process, where the sketch is a necessary step to get to the final art. It's not like you can just only paint when you're inspired, or only, you're not always, your energy level varies, I guess.
I just would like to respond to that too. I think early on when I was a child, I thought that illustrators just did the illustration and there it was. And then you realize that people do 20 sketches of a particular scene because they're trying to capture maybe the energy that was in the first sketch, but now the composition has changed and you're trying to bring that energy into this new composition. And you're absolutely right. I have some sketches that I love, but they're not in the right format to go into the book. So I think it's a constant, I don't want to call it a struggle, but it's a constant challenge of an artist to bring that energy into everything that we do. And sometimes the commercial aspect of publishing a book can mentally get in your way, at least for me, because I think of my personal work one way and my illustration work another way, but really, it should be an extension. They should be extensions of each other. So it's a challenge, and thank you for asking that question.
I'm afraid, are we out of time? One more question. Thank you.
So Out of Wonder are poems honoring the favorite poets of the three writers that wrote the poetry. I happen to know and love quite a few of them myself, and there was a selection process. If I'm not mistaken, there might have been maybe 24 poems and we had to go down to 20. And so I got to participate in that, because then it became, well, which ones do you feel more interested in illustrating? Mm. And there were some, I know there was one in particular, and I can't remember the artist right now, that I felt like nothing was coming for me with that particular person. So there's always an involvement of the illustrator once the team is sort of put together. Mm. And I was surprised that Candlewick didn't say to me, okay, we want a little girl doing this, and sort of give me a list of the things that I needed to illustrate. But instead, it was a process and a teamwork that we had. So that was true for Out of Wonder as well. Thank you for that question.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, everyone, for all your attention and for being here. Thank you, guys.